Welcome to Health Freedom Radio, live and local. From the center of New England, the center of the dial, and the center of information, Radio Central WCRN, 830 AM. Now, here are your hosts, Julie Boris and Dan Sykes.
Good morning. I'm Julie Boris, and I'm joined by my new co-host today, Lisa Mayer. And this is Health Freedom Radio. Health Freedom Radio is a new show airing weekly on Tuesdays from 9 to 10 a.m. And we'll be talking about all things health freedom uncensored. We believe all people have the fundamental right to make their own health decisions for themselves and their families free from coercive tactics. So if you heard the first two shows and you just heard our intro, you may have noticed we have a new co-host today, Lisa Mayer. Lisa Mayer was our guest last week, and we really had such a great time in the studio together. And unfortunately, my co-host Dan lives far away and can't be in the studio. And it was really complicated to try to do that with him on a Zoom call, totally muted, and us trying to do hand signals. And we're talking to Ted and we're talking to the guest. And it was just, we decided to try to do it this way today. Yeah. So we're all here in the studio with our guest today.
We'll miss Dan. He's awesome. And hopefully he'll come in and visit us.
He absolutely will. He absolutely will. We're going to set something up to make it easier and better so we could hear him better and he can call in on the regular. And we hope he will.
We hope
he's listening. And Dan, we love you.
We love you.
All right. So before we get underway, just our disclaimer, Lisa nor I are representing any organization. The views we express are our own and the views of any guests on the show are their own. And we are also not medical doctors and we are not offering any medical advice, nor are we offering any legal advice. So I saw a meme, Lisa, that made me think, you know, this is kind of what we wanted to talk about. It said, being taught to avoid talking about politics and religion has led to a lack of understanding of politics and religion. And what we should have been taught was how to have a civil conversation about a difficult topic. So that's why we're here. We want to have those conversations, even though they are hard. I just had this experience where I was in a store and I heard a woman talking about her sister who had recovered from cancer and was totally out of the woods and was doing great. And all of a sudden it came roaring back and I started talking to her when I was checking out. And then she started telling me about all the other people that she knew that, you know, her mom had also quickly died of cancer. And she knew of a young man who had a heart attack in his 30s and then another young girl who was running on a treadmill and dropped. So this one woman had all of these stories. And I said to her, can we just talk about the elephant in the room for 1 second? And she kind of looked at me and I said, did they all get the COVID shot? And, you know, and the boosters? And she said, yeah. And what I saw in her face was this moment where she knew that it made sense, but she had just never heard anybody say it out loud to her. And she was so thankful. Mm-hmm. And I told her about the show, so maybe she'll be listening. Who knows? And I gave her information where she could get more information at healthrightsma.org and watch that COVID expert panel that they did. And so you can see that right on their website. So today, it just made me realize if we can't talk about it, you know, Lisa and I, you and I were talking about this last night, we can't be informed. And if we can't be informed, then how can we possibly have informed consent? And rather than the truth and the right to refuse, what we experienced was coercion. So right. That's really
coercion, and also the government actively trying to prevent the population from knowing the truth and from knowing both sides and what the side effects could be and in fact are that they even knew about. So that's really concerning.
Right. So in our studio today, we have a guest. Our guest today is Jim Davidson, and he's a friend of Lisa's. That's how we met Jim. He is a former Air Force Reserve crew chief and financial professional, and he's here to share his story of how he was coerced to take a COVID-19 shot, a liability-free pharmaceutical product against his will, and a product that we now know is quite frankly dangerous. So, Jim Davidson.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. So tell us what happened to you when you decided that maybe you didn't want to do this thing to your body.
Yeah, so I was in the Air Force Reserves, actually, when the military came out with a mandate. And I was actually one of the few who decided I did not want to sign up for the shot for multiple reasons. And Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much coercion from the beginning. At first, they said there was going to be no mandate in the Air Force at all, and then they came out with a mandate. And I mean, for those that remember, it's hard to put ourselves back in that time frame. I mean, this thing was political from the start. I don't know if everyone remembers, but even the vaccine announcement itself, I think it came like a week after the presidential election. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a lot of people, that was for political reasons. And I mean, I think the same thing with the mandate itself. They made a lot of these vaccines. They were looking to get a lot of them distributed. You know, what better place to distribute them than mandating it for the military? So, you know, the military mandated it. Again, you know, when you look at the data for the vaccine, too, or what was happening with COVID at the time, when you look at the data, I mean, anyone could tell, even based on the CDC's own data, the people being affected from COVID, essentially, were people that were, you know, elderly and had underlying conditions. If you look at the main population of the military, they did not fit that description. And so when I look at myself, and I think this was the biggest problem I had with it, too, is that, like, you know, myself, I'm a finance professional. I'm not a health expert, but I know how to read numbers and understand numbers. And when I'm looking at the data and it doesn't make sense, you know, for, you know, younger person that doesn't have underlying conditions to not, one, am I not at risk for the vaccine? So it doesn't make sense. But then two, you start hearing about all these potential side effects and dangers from the vaccine. So as I look at the data, I'm like, you know, it does not make sense for me or really anybody in the military to sign up for this thing. So we decided that that's, you know, something that we didn't want to do. And, you know, of course, there was no option in the military. It's mandated. So when we went through the process, it was just, we had to like meet with our commander. There was a series of people, and the whole experience was actually pretty crazy when you go through it, because it was, as a reservist, you meet once a month. And the first month, it's like pretty nonchalant. There's really no repercussion. The second time that you go in, all of a sudden the penalties and the pressure gets a little bit tougher and tougher. And then finally it gets to the point where you're literally in the vaccine line. And, you know, there's a lot of people that have their entire livelihoods on the line that are being forced to get this thing. And I mean, I couldn't tell you, there were so many people that I knew in the military that were like literally on the fence about like going through it. They did not want to get it, but they had their entire livelihoods, you know, that's how their entire career was in the military. And it would have been super hard for them to find a career outside of the military. So, you know, against their will, they were forced to sign up for this.
Coercion, the word of the day. Yeah. Coercion. Yeah. And did you also get coerced from your employer, or was that, it was like you got double coerced, right?
Yeah. So this was, you know, kind of the crazy time frame. So, you know, here I am, a young professional. I'm in the military. That's one source of income. I also was working in the software industry. That was my other source of income. And both the military and my employer at the time was a federal contractor. So they came out with their own mandate as well. So, you know, here I am, both of my sources of income during COVID, which, you know, at the time or during the lockdowns, not a lot of places were hiring. And then, you know, lo and behold, we were also expecting a baby at the time. But, you know, that just made the situation even worse. So here I am, I'm like, both streams of income are potentially gone. We have a baby on the way. So it really was, I was not in a good place in that time frame.
Yeah, a lot of people were coerced. You are among the many.
Must have been incredibly stressful.
Yeah, and the thing with the military one as well is when you look at the mandate, they had approved this emergency use authorization. So when the military mandate came out, there was they had mandated the Comirnaty version of the Pfizer vaccine. Mm-hmm. And on the military base, they only distributed the emergency use version. So legally, the two are separated. Mm-hmm. And the vaccine that the military was forcing you to take was the emergency use one. They actually never even got the Comirnaty shot to the bases. So there was, like, legally, they were mandating something, a product that wasn't even, like, legal in the military. So, and I think that's what a lot of these lawsuits were about, is that legally they were two separate things. And, you know, they were forcing people to take them. But, yeah, so, I mean, the whole thing was just a very unstable time. I like stability in my life, and, mm-hmm. you know, especially with a baby on the way. And, yeah, it forced me to really kind of think outside the box and do some different things. Luckily, I ended up finding a different employer that wasn't mandating it. So I was able to...
So you did have to leave your job and start over again. And I hope this is a better job with a better employer.
Yeah.
Leaves in... bodily autonomy.
Clearly.
And health freedom. And, you know, the big issue here is, when did this encroachment on our bodily autonomy, like, begin? Like, it's been creeping up on us. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, wait, who owns your body? Like, and who has the fundamental, who has the right to tell you what to do? And I don't even take an aspirin. So if you're trying to tell me to inject a pharmaceutical product.
Right.
We're not having this conversation. So
who owns your body and who owns your kids' bodies?
Exactly.
Which we'll talk about more later.
Exactly. So we have the fun. So you have stepped up, and we're going to talk about that after the break. But you have stepped up and you've gotten involved to fight against this infringement on our rights and freedoms. So definitely stay with us. Later in the show, we're going to hear an update on baby Nate, the situation of the 15-month-old in DCF custody that may have been forced to get a COVID-19 shot this morning. We don't even know, and this is against his parents' wishes. And we're also going to hear later in the show from some freedom-loving business owners. And at the end of the show, we'll be talking about common sense. Where did it go? I miss it. Do you guys miss it?
Yes.
Yes. So what's one thing you're being asked to believe related to COVID that just makes no sense? So we'll take some calls at the end of the show. You're listening to Health Freedom Radio on WCRN Radio Central, 830 on the AM dial or at WCRNradio.com. I want to start by thanking our sponsors. Our sponsor today is Health Rights Massachusetts. That's healthrightsma.org. And the mission of Health Rights MA is to ensure that the fundamental right to bodily autonomy, including the right to exercise informed consent and the right to privacy of personal medical information, is legally protected in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in regard to all medical health care treatments and procedures. So today we're talking with Jimmy Davidson. He's back. He's here in our studio. Jimmy and I were talking about the SAFE bill. It's the statewide public health equity bill, and it's $200 million of ARPA funds to create equity in healthcare across the Commonwealth. But what's the catch? And the catch is the towns that take the money will be compelled to comply with national standards if they wish to receive federal funds. So we have a clip that we're going to play of Javier Becerra. And when you listen to this clip, it takes it just 1 minute. You understand what the catch is, and you can really substitute anything in the place of masks on two-year-olds. Okay, so if you could play that clip.
Mr. Secretary, did forcing two-year-olds to wear masks save lives?
Do what now?
Did forcing two-year-olds to wear masks save lives?
Making sure people wore masks when it was appropriate was essential to make sure that we were able to get out of this pandemic.
Sure, but that wasn't my question. Could you answer the question that I asked?
Which is?
Did forcing two-year-olds to wear masks save lives?
And who did the forcing?
Well, your department, or the Head Start, which is under your department, had a mask mandate until late last year for two-year-olds and above, even outdoors. So can you point to any public health benefit of that policy?
Right. We never forced anyone to do anything because we don't have the jurisdiction or authority to do that. What we did was provide guidance on what would
be the policy. Mr. Secretary, did Head Start have a mask mandate?
We provide a mask mandate, a requirement for jurisdictions that wish to receive money provide particular services.
So Head Start did have a mask mandate for kids, yes?
We had a mask mandate for for agencies that wish to get federal dollars.
So that's a yes.
Okay, so you heard him say it a couple times. We didn't have the authority to do that, but for towns that wanted to receive federal funding, we can require it. So it's kind of like an end run around your rights. And this is happening in legislation all throughout our state. So those funds, the ARPA funds, which are American Rescue Plan Act funds, they're federal funds that came down during COVID, and they decided how they were going to spend them throughout the state. So this is $200 million. I don't know. They spent them on all sorts of stuff, too. But they give this money to the town, but then you have to comply. And we saw this in Milton as a perfect example, right? So there was a caller the first episode. Her name was Amy. And she said, we have to tie this into the housing crisis. She's talking about housing. I was confused at the time. I didn't really understand the connection she was trying to make. And then you saw the headlines about Milton, Massachusetts. So I have just a little headline here. From WBUR, Milton begins losing state grants after town vote overrides state-mandated housing plan. So Milton decides, well, I don't want to follow these rules that are set out for me and these grants that were accepted that I didn't really know anything about, you know. These things were signed off by your local boards of health and your select boards, and, you know, you're not really included in that process. So Milton has lost eligibility for $140,000 state waterfront improvement grant the Healey administration officials announced Wednesday. The move was the first in what could be a series of penalties in the wake of a town's vote to override a state-mandated zoning law. Massachusetts Housing Secretary Ed Augustus said in a letter to the town officials that Milton is out of compliance with the MBTA community laws, which require cities and towns with T-zone stops to zone for additional multi-family housing. The town's non-compliant status means that the town will begin losing out on significant grant funding from the state effective immediately. So you don't want to do this. We're going to start punishing you in other ways by keeping your own taxpayer dollars from you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy, you said that you've seen some of this from the local level happening.
Yeah, exactly. And I started after everything that happened in 2020, I decided that like government had failed in a big way. So I decided to start getting involved in local government. So I ended up joining the planning board, and one of the themes that I've seen is this is a theme throughout government where they are pretty much trying to take the power away from local individuals and local communities and roll them up into a central planning agency. And this is a primary example of that, where what will happen is the state will come in and they'll offer a community grant money, and they'll only do that if they do the things that they want it to have done. So, for example, in my town, we have these projects to, like, we want to replace some of the sidewalks in the town. They're getting beat up. We want to replace them. And some of the central planning agencies have said, oh, we'll give you grant money to do that, but if we do that, you also have to build bike lanes everywhere. And, like, my town is not a good spot for to throw bike lanes in every corner. I used to live in Somerville. I used to live on busy roads. They put them up. They brought roads from two lanes down to one lane. It created an absolute mess. And that's what a lot of these agencies do, and that's how they pitch it to members in the town, is they'll say, hey, because we're getting this grant money, which is essentially just tax dollars from a different pocket, they say this project makes sense. But when you go to these meetings and you say, hey, you know, does this project make sense without the grant money, 10 times out of 10, the answer is going to be no.
It just seems like everything is going in the opposite direction of what our founding fathers intended, which was a small federal government and more local control. And everything, you know, with this central planning, with the pharma rules and all of that, it's all going to this central control. And we're being forced to comply, but we're being incentivized to comply by them just throwing money at us, and we're all just accepting it and falling for it.
Right. Most of the cities and towns already took the grant money for this public health excellence. But really, people, what you should be doing is reaching out at the local level and asking those questions, like, why can I speak at my board of health? And if so, why not? And can I go to these alliances? We were talking about, there's what's been happening over the last several years with our public health department with smaller grants, is they are creating alliances, kind of like regional alliances. Kind of sounds like regional districts, like District 12. But sorry. But anyway, according to the people that have asked, you're not allowed to go to those meetings. Now, I don't know if that's true across the board. I don't know if every regional alliance is not open to public comment, but, you know, why? It's kind of like there's a layer of government that's unelected, another layer of government that's central planning us. And I don't like it.
Yeah, it's very concerning, because it's basically what they did to us during COVID on steroids.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's exactly, I think, follows the theme. So like the Board of Health is a perfect example, where in a certain town, you might have a individual board of health come up to a conclusion on doing something that's in the best interest of the town. But what they want to do, or what they're doing, is they're creating this layer of government over the town board of health into this like regional board of health. So in order to participate that, first, you can't just be a regular citizen and attend that meeting. You have to be elected to the board of health first before you can go to those meetings. So it's like creating this extra layer of government that essentially is
shadow government.
Yeah, a way that they can push their agenda on individual towns in a way that they might not be able to otherwise.
Right. And the bill gives like all this safe bill, which I have the bill numbers here somewhere. I'll try to get them. what the bill does is it will force cities and towns to comply with national standards and what they call foundational capabilities. So you can't just do whatever you want to improve public health in your town. You have to do it the way they want you to do it if you want to get the money. And so, like, what are the strings attached? And complying with national standards, CDC, FDA, I mean, is that who we're supposed to comply with? And then, you know, even if the boards of health, like, technically have the power to say no, you know, this law says that the commissioner of the Department of Public Health may create the pandemic response to any outbreak or healthcare situation important to the public health. Like, what's a healthcare institution? You know, they could use any, that's anything. The language is so broadly given. And that's what got us into trouble in the first place, is when they gave away all the governors these powers during a public health emergency with no checks or balances, broadly given. And that's what they did. They broadly used them.
Great example in my town would be mask mandates. So there were some towns that removed the mask mandates pretty early on. I don't know if you remember, but then there were other towns that were like, well, after the lockdowns had ended, they had continued these mask mandates. And it was really up to the individual boards of health in every single town to determine whether a mask mandate would be implemented in that town or not. So essentially what this could do would create these central planning agencies that control different regions in, like, these types of decisions, and they put on, like, mask mandates for individual towns.
You know, I really, that is a great point, and that is, it was insanity. But before you go, we have to wrap up in a few minutes. I want you to tell people, what are you doing to fight back against this? Like, what have you decided to do to step up and protect our rights and freedoms?
Yeah, so I had an awakening. I realized that voting is really one level of getting involved in government, and it's really just the basic level. You really need to get involved in more levels. So what I'm doing, I'm running for the Republican State Committee, and they're kind of like the governing body of the Republican Party, and the goal is to bring a functioning two-party state into Massachusetts. So we're running this group of kind of outsider candidates. It's part of this group called the MA Massachusetts Freedom Slate. MAFreedomSlate.com is the website where you can go to find a lot of these outsider candidates that want to actually bring change to Massachusetts.
Okay, that's awesome. So that was MAFreedomSlate.com, where you can go and find that information. And I'm just going to thank Jimmy for coming in today.
Can Jimmy tell what towns he's in?
Sure, yep. So it's the second Worcester district. It's Auburn, Grafton, Millbury, Shrewsbury, Westboro, and Worcester.
Okay, stay tuned after the break. WCRN Radio. Thanks a lot. You're listening to Health Freedom Radio on WCRN Radio Central, 830 on the AM dial or at WCRNradio.com. So coming up in a few minutes, we're going to hear from Nathaniel. Nathaniel is the father whose son is in DCF custody, and they're forcing him, and they may have actually already forced him to get a COVID shot. We're going to hear from him about what's going on. But first, we're going to hear from Dr. Renata Moon, who is a pediatrician. She has a board certification in pediatrics, and she's been practicing for 25 years. And she's going to talk about the risks and benefits of the COVID shot, in her opinion, and from what she's seen in her own practice. So if you could roll that clip for us.
Statistically, your child's risk of dying from COVID was basically a statistical zero. Okay, it was extraordinarily rare for a child to die of COVID. So we have to remember that there was never an emergency for our nation's children. There never was. The pharmaceutical companies have managed to get it onto the traditional childhood shot schedule under emergency measures in large part. And it should not be sitting there. It should not be sitting on our shot record. What alarms me is there are many things about this, but I have direct knowledge of more cases of myocarditis clearly linked to the administration of this product than I've ever seen in my entire career. I want everyone to remember how rare myocarditis used to be. What is disputed is what happens as a result of that. And the reality is we don't know the long-term dangers of having myocarditis for many of our young people. They have whole lives ahead of them. They need to make sure they have healthy hearts. And we don't know. This is an untested product. But we do know that in some cases, myocarditis can be fatal. It has been fatal.
Okay, so you heard it from Dr. Renata Moon, and there really doesn't seem to be any reason to give a COVID-19 shot to a 15-month-old baby. And there seems to be a lot of really good reasons not to do it. So really the question is why. So we're going to hear from Nathaniel right now. Nathaniel has tried to do everything he can to stop his baby from getting this COVID shot. And I think he's been to court at least 3 times. So he's going to give us an update of, you know, what happened. So Nathaniel, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, Julie.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. God is good, ultimately. But so, yeah, I filed a motion. It was denied. I filed an appeal. It was denied. I was really, really, really depending on this court system to, you know, to work out like it's supposed to, you know, to do their jobs like they're supposed to. But apparently in every aspect of this kangaroo court, it's just all corrupt. They basically stated in the appeal that the father, which is me, he does not have the right to make decisions concerning the administration of routine medical care to the child. I don't know anywhere where COVID-19 vaccination is considered routine medical care to anybody under 12 years old, first of all. Second of all, no matter what I do, like, these people are consistently trying to poison my child, and it's just ridiculous. We have a right to know by what authority are you taking these actions. I told DCF I do not want a contract with them that I was coerced into signing. They told me if I didn't sign these paperwork, then I wouldn't be able to see my son. I wouldn't be able to have visits. They made me believe I had to jump through all these hoops just even be in my son's life. You know, he was taken from his mother's maternal mother's house because of the actions in her family and her relatives and stuff going on in her home. And they're trying to lump me up into this group like I'm guilty by association, you know, and I'm just trying to care for my child and love my child and protect my son. Like, I have that right. That is my job as his father. And
Absolutely.
It's a little disappointing. It's a little disappointing whenever I do everything that I can and I really, really lean on, you know, the legal system to do their job, and they just do everything but their job.
Right.
You know?
Right. And now there was an opportunity where he could have gone to stay with your mother. Right. And that's and that was also denied at the very beginning of this whole thing. So and do you know, did he get the shot this morning? Do you not know? Are you just completely in the dark?
I do not. I'm in the dark 100%. I've called the pediatrician's office. I'm on the contact list. I am, you know, his primary care. I was his primary care for the first 6 months of his life. They've kept me in the dark completely. I've had 4 different answers by 2 different people. I have not received a call back from his pediatrician, and I've been calling her for over a week. No matter what I do, I can't get an answer, whether it's from DCF or the pediatrician. The only ones I'm getting answers from is the court. And of course, they're ruling in favor of DCF because apparently the judges have no control over DCF. Apparently the judge isn't higher than a DCF attorney or a freaking social worker who has no badge, no say, no gun, no nothing, no knowledge. Like, these people are the most ignorant people I've ever had to deal with. And they're telling me that they have some kind of medical expertise that defines whether or not my son needs this vaccination. Like,
right.
This is asinine.
Right.
This is asinine.
Yeah. What
a nightmare.
You know what? They're going to be. Yeah. I'm living a nightmare. You know, and
you got the beep. So we can't say that word on the radio,
but we understand why.
You should see the look on Ted's face right now. Phew. Yeah, you can't say that because they get penalized. But you have another court hearing. Is this true tomorrow for that? You have an opportunity to possibly
know
that has been canceled.
That's been canceled, yeah, because I tried to file an emergency custody hearing as me as the petitioner instead of the defendant in the DCF case. And because my public defender at the time of the hearing withdrew from the case because he didn't want to fight the way that I needed him to fight, they decided to change the entire hearing from emergency custody hearing to a lawyer or public defender hearing. But I ended up actually I came in contact with a very esteemed attorney, and he's actually helping me with the case. So that court date is off, and it's actually set for March 15th, which is the emergency custody hearing
March 15th.
Review and reading.
Okay, so Nathaniel, thank you so much for calling in. We're going to keep following your story. I have added a page to the healthfreedomradio.org website under the stories tab, and I'm going to be posting as we go along if there's anything that Nathaniel wants to share and get out to you. I'm going to post it there. So whatever it is that you can do to help, we will post probably later today or tomorrow, whatever the call to action is. So, you know, the question is, why are they doing this when the evidence of the danger is so clear? And why are people in Massachusetts so slow on the uptake when all over the country, all over the world, Texas, you know, you can't give any COVID mandates. There's other places. Japan has stopped the shot, I believe, in the Netherlands. I got to fact check that. But in Florida, the Florida Surgeon General, Joe Lapido, called for a halt of the mRNA COVID vaccines over concern about residual DNA contaminants in the vaccine integrating with the human DNA and causing health risks. So who do you believe?
So there are many experts that have been saying that, top level experts, and it probably didn't hear from them if you didn't see behind the Iron Curtain like we did.
Exactly, exactly. And so, you know, it says, despite the FDA's debunking of those concerns. So who do you believe? The Harvard-educated doctor who sticks his neck out when he's got nothing to gain and everything to lose, or the FDA? I mean, tough one, right?
Right.
So they say, you know, trust the experts, except not that expert and not that expert and not that expert. And so we just keep seeing this over and over and over again. And so I would like to roll a clip of John Bowden. John is a Massachusetts resident, and he wrote a book, The Real CDC, which is subtitled COVID Facts for Regular People. So if you could play that clip right now.
Cassidy was 7 years old. She died on January 18, 2022. I looked in Bears. I found a report of a seven-year-old from Massachusetts. I also looked in the death certificates in Massachusetts. I have every seven-year-old who died in 2022 in that time frame. Only one fits, and it was Cassidy. And the Bears report states, in her first vaccine, she started vomiting in 5 minutes after the vaccine and for 8 to 10 hours. And then it talks about the second vaccine. So they waited a couple of weeks, injected her again. Terrible stomach pain, 103-degree fever, didn't have a bowel movement for 3 days. The report ends because the report was entered on January 15. And Bears has this weird thing where you can't update a report. So when somebody is input and then somebody wants to go update the report and add the fact that they died, they don't let them do it. So there's the death certificate of Cassidy, which says January 18. I believe it's the same girl. I have a lawsuit against the public health commissioner, the governor, the chief medical examiner, and four individual medical examiners in Massachusetts for massive amounts of fraud on public records being death certificates. I have no private right of action to prosecute criminally, or that's what I would do. We as citizens can't do that. That's a monopoly of the government, which is why I'm looking to impanel grand juries somewhere in the United States. And I hope to get Massachusetts legislators, medical examiners, and so forth subpoenaed to those grand juries to testify as to why they wrote complications of coronavirus 19 viral infection on Cassidy's death certificate. It's the only cause listed in part one. And all the moms and dads, and not only in Groton, Massachusetts, but all around Massachusetts, because it was on Channel 5, it was on Channel 25, and they told everybody that this little girl died from COVID. Well, first of all, she didn't die from COVID. She died from complications of coronavirus 19 viral infection without any complications listed. How do you die from complications of something with nothing else, like no pneumonia? There's nothing else listed in part one of her death certificate. I believe her death certificate is a blatant fraud on the people. And those who went out and got their kids vaccinated thinking that a child died from COVID, who really died in reacting to a vaccine in 5 minutes, that's extremely criminal behavior.
It is beyond disturbing how the data is being hidden and manipulated, and we have to believe that it is deliberate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not an accident. They're not this.
Yeah. Best intentions are not what's going on here.
Right.
But so if you want to actually hear more from John Bowden, we have an event coming up that I know about, hosted by our sponsor, Health Rights MA. John Bowden will be presenting March 10th at the Shrewsbury Public Library from 2 to 4 p.m. And you can get all the information on that at healthrightsma.org. We'll be back after the break with our first freedom-loving business spotlight. Ed and Amy Bolter will be talking about My Salon. And we'll also be taking callers in the last segment. Common Sense, Where Did It Go? You're listening to Health Freedom Radio on WCRN Radio Central, 8:30 on the AM dial or at WCRNradio.com. So, if you want to keep us talking about Health Freedom Uncensored on the airwaves, where we can reach outside that censorship bubble, we're going to need sponsors for our show. So we have some great sponsorship opportunities to get the word out about your business to Massachusetts freedom-loving people. So if you're interested in that, please email for more info. The email is hello@healthfreedomradio.org. And there are other ways to support the show. You can become a walking billboard. So go to our website. We have some cute merch, some t-shirts, water bottles, and we're going to be offering 100% cotton t-shirts and sweatshirts. And I'm looking for organic options, of course. And yes, we have V-necks.
Yeah. Can I say that Julie is wearing a really cool hoodie sweatshirt right now. Beautiful blue, super nice logo.
Yeah, don't tease
them. I'm jealous.
This one's not on the website yet.
Yet.
Okay.
Keep an eye out.
Ted's got something to say.
Oh, I got to get some of that swag, baby.
So, and for everyone that's going to ask, yes, we are going to have V-necks, and we'll have men's and women's and unisex, and we get a cute coffee cup that is lead-free, and maybe a baseball cap. So what's on our website now is all the virtual drop ship stuff, but if you wait a week, you will have the custom designs that will be available.
Lovingly handmade in Massachusetts.
Lovingly handmade in Massachusetts, yes. So go to the website, and the other way you can support the show is you can just give a recurring donation. If you want to give $1 an episode, $2 an episode, you can go to our website. There's a button that says give, and you can donate $8 a month, and then that can be recurring. And if we had enough people that did that, we wouldn't even need sponsors, and then we could have all the airtime all to ourselves to talk about more Health Freedom Uncensored. So the next person we have on our show is Ed. One of the things we really wanted to do, Lisa and I met through our Health Freedom group. We get together all the time in person, you know, COVID restrictions be damned. And we are building a parallel community of people that we can rely on and work with that also care about health freedom. And
so we want to support them.
And we want to support them. Exactly. So on our show next is Ed. And Ed, you on the line there?
I am. Thank you.
Awesome. So Ed and Amy Bolter own and operate My Salon. My Salon suite locations in both Westboro and Leominster. And I'm just going to let Ed tell you about his business because he's going to do a much better job than me. So Ed, why don't you take it away and tell us all about My Salon and also, of course, about how much you love freedom.
Well, great. And good morning, Julie and Lisa. And thanks for the opportunity to speak with your audience today. So My Salon Suite, we're a nationwide franchise. And what we do is we make it really easy and affordable for people in the beauty and wellness trade to break out and start their own business. And, you know, basically act as entrepreneurs, right? So what we do is we go in, we'll build 20 to 30 plus individual luxury salon suites. We lease them out to these folks who are looking to, you know, go from being an employee to an employer of themselves. And, you know, basically we're a business that helps other people start more small businesses in the community. And I think that's an important element of what we bring to the table.
What kind of businesses would rent space from you? Like what kind of services would we see?
Anything from nail artists, hairstylists, people who operate med spas, permanent makeup, really anything, estheticians. It's really anybody in that kind of associated group. Typically these folks work on a commission basis and in a traditional salon. They'll have many years of experience. They're given, you know, quite a bit of, you know, what they fill out back to the salon owner. By going solo, they're able to, you know, capture all of that revenue, bring that back home and put it on the kitchen table and, you know, better their situation.
You know what I love the most about this is that it enables people to be self-employed. And as we can
Correct.
See with all of these COVID mandates and everything, that it's more important than ever to be
your own boss.
Yeah.
So nobody can push you around and say you have to do these, you know, crazy
Absolutely. They're in charge
measures.
Of their own destiny.
Yep. Right, exactly.
It's entrepreneurs creating more entrepreneurs. So thank you,
it.
Ed and Amy, for starting this great business. And these can be found where again?
So we were the first to bring this to Massachusetts in our Westboro facility. We just opened a brand new facility at the Water Tower Plaza in Leominster, 29 suites there. We have a great core group of people. And if anybody knows any estheticians, lash artists, permanent makeup artists, massage techs, whatever, have them give us a call at 508-500-9000, and we'd be happy to get them in their own business.
Awesome. Yeah, what's that number?
508-500-9000.
So if they want to be their own boss and have their own salon or studio in your Leominster location, because I believe your Westboro location is pretty booked up, pretty full.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so be your own boss. Don't have anyone else tell you what to do. And thanks for calling in, Ed. And if, again, you want to reach Ed, it's 508-500-9000. How'd you get that number? Wow.
That's a great number.
I paid for it a long time ago, but thanks for the opportunity.
That's great. All right, so the rest of our show, we're going to call, if anyone wants to call in, we're going to be talking about common sense. What happened to it? Where did it go? What are some of the things you've been asked to believe about COVID mandates or policies that just, with your own eyes, just your critical thinking skills, your common sense?
What's that Orwellian quote? What did Orwell say? It was their last, and I don't have it written down, so I'm going to bumble it, but it was their last and most essential command to ignore the evidence before their very eyes and ears.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Like the one that you hear the most is when we walked into a restaurant, you had to wear a mask in the door. You had to wear a mask to your table. Then when you sat down, you could take the mask off. But then if you got up, you had to, you know, like as if there was like a three feet of space. Yeah,
right,
cloud. It travels only at a certain level, but at another level, it's not there. So that one was just...
It's great how they figured that out.
Yeah. There was just no common sense.
Well, another one I love about the mask is how you can wear a mask and your glasses get fogged, but your breath is not escaping out the edges of your mask.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Your breath is in the room. It's not being captured by the mask because we have evidence your glasses are being fogged.
Right. And the smoke test, you see the people that just smoke and they push it right through the mask.
Oh, yeah. The smoke even goes right through the front of the mask.
I think Ted has a.
Oh, I just remember that surgeons are told not to wear the mask for more than 20 minutes. Because it will produce apoxia. And that's what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. You can see the carbon monoxide coming out the side of the mask. But in fact, while the mask is on, you're re-inhaling your own carbon monoxide. Surgeons are told not to use it for more than 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it makes sense. And they actually pump extra oxygen into surgery theaters so that they actually have more oxygen coming in. So 508-871-7000 if you want to call in with your own 508-871-7000 with your own kind of like, hey, what happened to common sense? And doesn't this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have some other ones, Lisa?
Well, another one that I was thinking of is that after COVID, after the vaccines were rolled out, all these young people are dying of heart issues or just dying mysteriously in their sleep. And nobody wonders.
It's everything but I've seen so many things. I've seen that poor sleep can give you a sudden heart attack. I've seen gardening. really, but it's not the vaccine. It's never the vaccine. The vaccine is the world's greatest coincidence that ever happened, and it's never that. It's anything but that.
Speaking of memes, I love that meme where somebody's holding their heart like they're having a heart attack, and they say, "Oh, I'm having a coincidence."
I know it's not funny. It's sad.
No, it's not funny.
It really is sad, but it is a little bit funny.
But we have to laugh, otherwise we'll just cry.
Yeah. One of the other ones is, with the restaurants, because it was just so stupid. With the restaurants, they would make them build an outside, and then they would put a tent around it. So they built an inside outside, and then you could eat out there, but you couldn't go into the restaurant.
Yeah.
So
crazy.
We have a caller on the line? Okay, are you...
Her name is Maury, and she wants to talk about common sense.
Okay.
Hi, it's actually Lori.
Hi, Lori.
Hi, Lori.
Hello, Julie and Lisa. Your show is fabulous. Why common sense, which I still see sometimes, is when you go to a supermarket and they have that plexiglass that is literally right in front, but there's big areas on the sides. The plexiglass is only like 3 feet wide, not even, maybe 2 feet wide, 3 feet high. So the air is getting all around from yourself and the person. So what's the need for the plexiglass?
Right. Right. It's all just an illusion to create fear.
It really is. It's fear, or like those arrows that used to be the aisles. you could only go. The only thing that I thought was great about those arrows was that people couldn't park their carts in the middle of the aisles and block the area. You know? But it did nothing about the breeze. Like, it was just not.
Yep. Doesn't. Common sense. Rest in peace.
Common sense. Yep.
Thanks for calling in, Lori.
Thank you, Lori.
All right. We're finishing up our show today. We hope you enjoyed it. And again, we want to thank our sponsors, healthrightsma.org. Please go sign up for their email list at healthrightsma.com. Visit healthfreedomradio.org to find out more about the show and find out any updates about baby Nate and what's going on with him. So we'll be back next week.
You've been listening to Health Freedom Radio on the center of New England, the center of the dial, and the center of information. Radio Central WCRN, 830 AM. Stay with us for more live and local radio right here on Radio Central, WCRN, AM 830.